see that their business might be everything and their intent everywhere. For that's it that always makes a good voyage of nothing. Farewell.
So Feste's off, and Orsino says,
let all the rest give place.
Orsino has heard his sad song and wants to be alone, but briefly holds Viola back.
Once more, Cesario, get thee to yon same sovereign cruelty. Tell her my love, more noble than the world, prizes not quantity of dirty lands.
Oh, go on, Cesario, give it one last chance. Go back to Olivia and do whatever it takes. I know she's wealthy, but tell her that isn't why I love her. Tell her she is all the fortune I need.
The parts that fortune hath bestowed upon her, tell her I hold as giddily as fortune. But 'tis that miracle and queen of gems that nature pranks her in attracts my soul.
It's her inner qualities that I love. Orsino really piling it on, but then Viola just cuts straight to the question. What if she really does have all this grief and can't love you?
But if she cannot love you, sir?
I cannot be so answered.
Sooth, but you must. Say that some lady, as perhaps there is, hath for your love as great a pang of heart as you have for Olivia. You cannot love her. You tell her so. Must she not then be answered?
You must be prepared to lose Olivia. But maybe there is another lady who loves you as much as you love Olivia.
There is no woman's sides can bide the beating of so strong a passion as love doth give my heart. No woman's heart so big to hold so much. They lack retention. Alas, their love may be called appetite. No motion of the liver, but the palate, that suffers surfeit, cloyment, and revolt. But mine is all as hungry as the sea, and can digest as much. Make no compare between that love a woman can bear me and that I owe Olivia.
No woman can love with a passion like mine. Their hearts and their appetites for life are too small. Orsino compares his love to the power of the sea. It is all-consuming. And no woman could love him with a fraction of the power with which he loves Olivia.
Aye, but I know.
What dost thou know?
Too well what love women to men may owe. In faith they are as true of heart as we. My father had a daughter, loved a man. As it might be, perhaps, were I a woman, I should your lordship.
Viola is so close to telling Orsino that she loves him. Instead, she speaks of her unrequited love for him under the guise of a tale about her non-existent sister.
And what's her history?
A blank, my lord. She never told her love, but let concealment, like a worm in the bud, feed on her damask cheek.
Oh, yuck! Shakespeare has in mind a rose with a maggot in it, eating the petals. My sister was like that. She concealed her love, and it just ate her away.
She pined in thought, and with a green and yellow melancholy, she sat like Patience on a monument, smiling at grief.
She loved so much it made her ill, green with envy and yellow with jealousy. Both tore at her. All she could do all day was sit there like a statue carved on a tomb.
Was not this love indeed? We men may say more, swear more. But indeed our shows are more than will, for still we prove much in our vows, but little in our love.
But died thy sister of her love, my boy?
I am all the daughters of my father's house, and all the brothers, too. And yet I know not.
She doesn't lie, but muddies the truth, then changes the subject when it gets a little too close for comfort.
Sir, shall I to this lady?
Aye, that's the theme. To her in haste, give her this jewel. Say, my love can give no place, bide no delay.
Yes, go to Olivia and give it all you've got. Don't take no for an answer. And they both exit. Act 2, Scene 5. Maria said that she would place the forged love letter where Toby, Andrew and Feste could watch Malvolio make a fool of himself. Well, this scene is about to happen, but it's not Feste who witnesses the fun, but a new character, Fabian. I mentioned earlier that Robert Armin, the actor who originally played Feste, didn't want to perform some of his scenes, and so, to keep the company happy, Shakespeare created the character of Fabian, a second-rate fool, to take some of his lines. Olivia's garden. Enter Sir Toby, Sir Andrew, and Fabian.
Come my way, Signor Fabian.
Nay, I'll come, if I lose a scruple of this sport. Let me be boiled to death with melancholy.
Boiled to death with melancholy. You can hear Feste in that line of Fabian's, and of course they would have been spoken by the same character if it weren't for Armin's tantrums.
Wouldst thou not be glad to have the niggardly, rascally sheep-biter come by some notable shame?
We now get a run of animals to which Malvolio is compared.
I would exult, man. You know he brought me out of favour with my lady about a bear bait in here.
To anger him, we'll have the bear again. And we will fool him black and blue, shall we not, Sir Andrew?
And we do not. It is pity of our lives.
So they will chain him down with the love letter, and its trickery will shame and beat him.
Here comes the little villain. How now, my metal of India?
Get you all three into the box tree. Malvolio's coming down this walk. He has been yonder in the sun, practising behaviour to his own shadow this half hour. Observe him for the love of mockery, for I know this letter will make a contemplative idiot of him. Close in the name of jesting!
Malvolio comes on stage now, and he's practising a courtly walk with little bows as he fantasises about marrying Olivia. He believes he should be something better in life than a mere steward. So, Toby, Andrew and Fabian hide, and Maria drops the letter.
Lie thou there, for here comes the trout that must be caught with tickling.
And with that little hope, Maria exits and Malvolio moves to centre stage.
'Tis but fortune. All is fortune. Maria once told me she did affect me, and I have heard herself come thus near, that should she fancy, it should be one of my complexion.
So Maria has already started the job by laying hints with Malvolio that Olivia already has some feeling for him.
Besides, she uses me with a more exalted respect than anyone else that follows her. What should I think on?
He is a fool. He thinks that Olivia has more respect for him than anyone else. It may be true, but it's because she is grieving her loss and wants somebody quiet and respectful around her. It doesn't mean she has romantic feelings for him.
Here's an overweening rogue.
Oh, peace! Contemplation makes a rare turkey cock of him. How he jets under his advanced plumes!
So he's all puffed up and strutting about like a fine peacock. To jet is to strut, but their scheme will reduce him to an ugly turkey.
Slight, I could so beat the rogue.
Peace, I say.
Slight is an oath. It comes from by God's light. Slight.
To be Count Malvolio.
This would have delighted the audience, as Malvolio is a Puritan and was supposedly the enemy of position and titles. Yet deep down, this is what he wants. Oh, he's such a hypocrite.
Ah, rogue. Pistol him! Pistol him! Peace! Peace!
There is example for it. The Lady of the Strachy married the Yeoman of the Wardrobe.
This is an interesting line with a possible double meaning. It could simply mean that marriages did take place between couples of different social strata, and may even refer to a contemporary court marriage, but with record-keeping being so lackadaisical there's no way of checking. Or, in the light of Shakespeare's Commedia dell'arte influences in this play, it could be a mistranslation of the word strachi, which means rags in Italian. So, the Lady of the Rags, some poor humble soul, married the Yeoman of the Wardrobe, the servant, responsible for the clothes. Either way, it shows that Malvolio hopes to marry above his station.
Fie on him, Jezebel!
Now, Jezebel married King Ahab to become Queen of Israel. She became a fanatical worshipper of the pagan god Baal and committed many atrocities, including burning babies as an offering to him. Here, Sir Andrew says that if Malvolio were to marry Olivia and gain power, he could be just as monstrous. And as he himself has designs on Olivia, he's doubly angry.
Oh, peace! Now he's deeply in. Look how imagination blows him.
Having been 3 months married to her, sitting in my state...
Oh, for a stone bow to hit him in the eye!
Calling my officers about me in my branched velvet gown, having come from a daybed where I have left Olivia sleeping.
To use Olivia's name is bad enough, but the allusion to them having had sex and him leaving her to sleep...
Fire and brimstone!
Oh, peace, peace!
And then, to have the humour of state, and after a demure travel of regard, telling them I know my place, as I would they should do theirs, to ask for my kinsman Toby.
And now, as a double crime, Malvolio uses Sir Toby's own first name.
Bolts and shackles!
Oh, peace, peace, peace!
Now, now!
7 of my people, with an obedient start, make out for him. I frown the while, and perchance wind up my watch, or play with my... some rich jewel. Toby approaches, curtsies there to me.
Shall this fellow live?
Though our silence be drawn from us with cars, yet peace!
Fabian means here that they need to be quiet, even though it's killing them. He uses the term drawn from us with cars, and this refers to being pulled apart.
I extend my hand to him, thus quenching my familiar smile with an austere regard of control.
And does not Toby take you a blow of the lips, then?
Saying, Cousin Toby, my fortunes having cast me on your niece, give me this prerogative of speech.
What? What?
You must amend your drunkenness.
Ouch, scab!
Nay, patience, or we break the sinews of our plot.
Besides, you waste the treasure of your time with a foolish knight.
That's me, I warrant you.
One Sir Andrew.
I knew 'twas I, for many do call me fool.
Then Malvolio sees the letter, and his fantasy is shattered, only to be replaced by something even more attractive to him.
What employment have we here?
Now is the woodcock near the gin?
A bird image to go with the animals. Woodcocks were caught in sprung traps, called gins. Thus their bird is trapped by their cunning letter.
Peace. And the spirit of humour's intimate reading aloud to him.
I hope he reads it aloud.
By my life, this is my lady's hand. These be her very C's, her U's, and her T's. And thus makes she her great P's. It is, in contempt of question, her hand.
Her C's, her U's, and her T's? Why that?
This is a very vulgar joke, in which Sir Andrew spells an obscene word.
To the unknown beloved, this and my good wishes. The very phrases. By your leave, wax.
The wax is used as a seal, so Malvolio breaks open the seal, which he recognises as Olivia's.
Soft, and the impression her Lucrece, with which he uses to seal, 'tis my lady. To whom should this be?
This wins him, liver and all.
The liver controlled passion, remember, so he is hooked.
Jove knows I love, but who? Lips do not move, no man must know. No man must know. What follows? The numbers altered. No man must know. If this should be thee, Malvolio...
Marry, hang thee, Brock!
A Brock is a badger.
I may command where I adore, but silence like a Lucrece knife with bloodless stroke my heart doth gore, M-O-A-I doth sway my life.
Remember earlier we mentioned the four elements, earth, air, fire and water. This is what she's put here. Mara is water, Orbis is earth, air is air and Ignis is fire. M-O-A-I doth sway my life.
A Faustian riddle.
Excellent wench, say I.
M-O-A-I doth sway my life. Nay, first, let me see.
What dish of poison has she dressed him?
And with what wing the staniel checks at it?
The staniel is a kestrel.
I may command where I adore. Why? She may command me, I serve her, she is my lady. Why, this is evident to any formal capacity, there's no obstruction in this. And the end. What should be alphabetical position pretend, if I could make that resemble something in me? Softly, softly. M-O-A-I.
Oh, I make up that. He is now at a cold scent.
Sauter will cry upon it for all this, though it be as rank as a fox.
A sauter is a useless hunting dog.
M. Malvolio. M, why, that begins my name.
Did not I say he would work it out? The cur is excellent at faults.
M. But then there's no consonancy in the sequel that suffers under probation. A should follow, but O does.
And O shall end, I hope.
I, or I'll cudgel him and make him cry, oh!
And then I comes behind.
Aye. And you had an eye behind you, you might see more detraction at your heels than fortunes before you.
Malvolio so wants to believe what's in front of him that he can't see what's really going on behind his back.
M-O-A-I. This simulation is not as the former, and yet, to crush this a little, it would bow to me, for every one of these letters are in my name. No, soft. Here follows prose. If this fall into thy hand, revolve. In my stars I am above thee, but be not afraid of greatness. Some are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them. My fates open their hands, let thy blood and spirit embrace them. And to inure thyself to what thou art like to be, cast thy humble slough and appear fresh.
He's frustrated by the sequence of letters and so moves on to the prose. It says the author is socially above him, but that can change. Shed your skin like a snake. This is all about metamorphosis. You can get rid of the appearance of steward and become lord. All because Olivia loves him. Ha!
Be opposite with a kinsman, surly with servants.
Directions for him to be mean and above himself with the likes of Sir Toby and Feste.
Let thy tongue-tang arguments of state put thyself into the trick of singularity.
Don't care about people below you that may want to be your friend. Be eccentric.
She thus advises thee that sighs for thee. Remember who commended thy yellow stockings and wished to see thee ever cross-gartered.
This is absolutely brilliant of Maria. Not only were gartered stockings, especially yellow ones, well out of fashion, they were associated with an obscene old song about a lecherous bachelor who wore yellow stockings to try and lure a wife. Pegger Ramsey, which is what Sir Toby called him earlier. If Malvolio wasn't so insular, he'd realise he was being set up, but he hasn't a clue.
I say, remember, go to, thou art made if thou desirest to be so. If not, let me see thee a steward. Still, the fellow of servants are not worthy to touch fortune's fingers. Farewell, she that would alter services with thee, the fortunate unhappy.
He thinks Olivia is saying to him that she would be happy to swap roles and become his servant.
Daylight and champagne discovers not more. This is open.
Champagne means countryside. It's clear as day what's happening.
I will be proud. I will read politic authors. I will baffle Sir Toby. I will wash off gross acquaintance. I will be point device. The very man. I do not now fool myself and let imagination jade me, for every reason excites to this, that my lady loves me. She did commend my yellow stockings of late. She did praise my leg being cross-gartered. In this she manifests herself to my love, and with a kind of injunction drives me to these habits of her liking. I thank my stars. I am happy.
I will be strange. Stout, in yellow stockings and cross-gartered, even with the swiftness of putting on. Jove and my stars be praised.
He'll do everything the letter asks. He totally believes that she's encouraging him to become her equal and marry her.
Here is yet a postscript. Thou canst not choose but know who I am. If thou entertain'st my love, let it appear in thy smiling. Thy smiles become thee well. Therefore, in my presence still smile, dear my sweet, I prithee. Jove, I thank thee. I will smile. I will do everything thou wilt have me.
And this is the final nail in Malvolio's coffin, and a stroke of genius from Maria. He must smile. Now Malvolio never smiles, and doesn't really know how to, but with God's help he will do it. And practicing a wide and rather manic grin, he rushes off. As soon as he's gone, the three men in hiding spring out, bursting with laughter.
I will not give my part of this sport for a pension of thousands to be paid from the Sophie.
The Sophie is the Shah of Persia, who was a very rich man indeed. Fabian says he wouldn't swap seeing Malvolio make a fool of himself for any amount of money.
I could marry this wench for this divorce.
So could I too.
And ask no other dowry with her but such another jest.
Nor I neither.
Here comes my noble gold catcher.
At this, Maria enters to see how it all went.
Wilt thou set thy foot on my neck?
Or on mine either.
Shall I play my freedom at trade trip and become thy bond slave?
If faith or I either.
Toby is so impressed with Maria's mischief that he talks of marrying her and being her slave and servant. An interesting parallel to Malvolio, who believes he can rise to the level of Olivia. But Toby is more realistic, as he can sink to Maria's level with ease.
Why, thou hast put him in such a dream that when the image of it leaves him, he must run mad.
Oh, it's such a mean trick that when he finds out the truth, it will be so awful for him, he'll go mad.
Nay, but say true, does it work upon him?
Like aqua vitae with a midwife.
It works like brandy on a mother giving birth. This would have been given by a midwife to help her relax.
If you will then see the fruits of the sport, mark his first approach before my lady. He will come to her in yellow stockings, and 'tis a colour she abhors, and cross-gartered, a fashion she detests, and he will smile upon her, which will now be so unsuitable to her disposition, being addicted to a melancholy as she is, that it cannot but turn him into a notable contempt. If you will see it, follow me.
To the gates of Tartar, thou most excellent devil of wit.
I'll follow you to hell itself.
I'll make one too.
And together they leave, and that ends Act Two. Act 3, Scene 1. We are outside Olivia's house. Feste plays a tabor and sings as Viola enters and walks over to him. The tabor, or small drum, was a popular instrument for professional fools because they could accompany themselves easily.
Oh, the wind and the rain, a foolish thing was but a toy for the rain. It raineth every
save thee, friend, and thy music. Dost thou live by thy table?
No, sir, I live by the church.
Art thou a churchman?
No such matter, sir. I do live by the church, for I do live at my house, and my house doth stand by the church.
So thou mayest say the king lies by a beggar, if a beggar dwell near him, or the church stands by thy table, if thy table stand by the church.
You have said, sir, to see this age. A sentence is but a chevril glove to a good wit. How quickly the wrong side may be turned outward.
A chevril glove is one made out of kid leather. That's the skin of a young goat. Feste uses it to mean that kid leather is easily stretched, so a witty man can turn words inside out. This stretching of language is a rarity in mainstream entertainment today, as our use of language has shrunk to make way for increasingly spectacular visual effects. But in Shakespeare's day, the strong oral tradition meant that an audience's grasp of metaphor and understanding of classical allusion was pretty sophisticated. Confident that his crowd was almost always with him, Shakespeare uses language with great subtlety, being able to tread lightly with a carefully chosen image, or to hit like a hammer with a bawdy joke. Just like Feste, he twists language any which way he wants, like working kid leather. This is also an image close to home for the young Will, who would have seen his father often working with fine leather as a master glovemaker in Stratford.
Nay, that's certain. They that dally nicely with words may quickly make them wanton.
I would therefore my sister had no name, sir.
Why, man?
Why, sir, her name's a word, and to dally with that word might make my sister wanton. But, indeed, words are very rascals since Bonds disgraced them.
Viola says that if you play with words and language, you can easily get confused, as many words are wanton or have multiple meanings. Feste quickly pounces on the fact that wanton itself can also mean to be immoral or sexually liberal, and says that his sister's name is a word, and so playing with language might make his sister immoral. Language is sly and can't be bound or held in.
Thy reason, man.
Troth, sir, I can yield you none without words, and words are grown so false I am loath to prove reason with them.
Viola doesn't quite understand what he means, but Feste can't explain further because to do so involves language, which has many meanings. A classic catch-22 situation.
I warrant thou art a merry fellow, cares for nothing.
Not so, sir. I do care for something, but in my conscience, sir, I do not care for you. If that be to care for nothing, sir, I would it would make you invisible.
Viola thinks Feste is frivolous, without feelings and sensitivity. But he senses that something about Cesario is not right, and is equally dismissive of her in the hope that she will leave.
Art not thou the Lady Olivia's fool?
No, indeed, sir. The Lady Olivia has no folly. She will keep no fool, sir, till she be married. And fools are as like husbands as pilchards are to herrings. The husband's the bigger. I am indeed not her fool, but her corrupter of words.
I'm no fool. That'll be her husband when she has one. Feste knows that intimacy changes things. We're always hurt deeper by those we love, and so all that he can be is her corrupter of words. In that phrase, we lose the sense of his playing with language and get a glimpse of the play's ugly underbelly of sadness, loss, and desire. Feste uses his great capacity with words to try and cheer Olivia up, but with others, especially Malvolio, he uses language to trap them.
I saw thee late at the Count Orsino's.
Foolery, sir, does walk about the orb like the sun. It shines everywhere. I would be sorry, sir, but the fool should be as oft with your master as with my mistress. I think I saw your wisdom there.
As a fool, he can go anywhere, like the sun. It's his job to shine humour on everyone. So he is at home at Olivia's court, as well as Orsino's, which is where Cesario must have left his brain.
Nay, and thou pass upon me, I'll no more with thee. Hold, there's expenses for thee.
Viola is tired of being tied up in knots by Feste, and says, that's it. But she offers him money, just like she did the captain.
Now, Jove, in his next commodity of hair, send thee a beard.
Of course, this could just be a nasty barbed comment about Viola, also known as Cesario, being so young. He doesn't even shave yet, meaning he isn't a man yet. But to us, the audience, it could also mean, I hope you get Orsino.
By my troth, I'll tell thee, I am almost sick for one.
Viola responds as if he meant the first option, but then, in an aside, just to the audience.
Though I would not have it grow on my chin.
Shows that she wishes she could have the bearded Orsino.
Is there a lady within?
Would not a pair of these have been bred, sir?
He wants more money. A double tip.
Yes, being kept together and put to use.
I would play Lord Pandarus of Phrygia, sir, to bring a Cressida to this Troilus.
Viola will not give Feste more money because he should work for it. And so he offers to play the role of Lord Pandarus of Phrygia. Phrygia is Troy, and this is a reference to the Greek legend of Troilus and Cressida. Pandarus arranged meetings between the two, as Cressida was his niece, and gave us the word panda, meaning a go-between or pimp. So he's going to play the go-between. Does he mean between Orsino and Viola? Has he seen through Viola's disguise? She immediately gives him another coin, and we get the sense that a little blackmail may just have taken place.
I understand you, sir. 'Tis well begged.
She gives him another coin.
The matter, I hope, is not great, sir. Begging, but a beggar. Cressida was a beggar. My lady is within, sir. I will constate to them whence you come. Who you are and what you would are out of my welkin. I might say element, but the word is overworn.
Feste seems to know her secret, but says that Viola's business is her own. That what she is and what she wants is nothing to do with him. In fact, they operate in different worlds. And he leaves.
This fellow is wise enough to play the fool. And to do that well craves a kind of wit. He must observe their mood on whom he jests, the quality of persons and the time, and, like the haggard, check at every feather that comes before his eye. This is a practice as full of labour as a wise man's art. For folly that he wisely shows is fit, but wise men, folly fallen, quite taint their wit.
She has gained a real respect for Feste, for his ability to size up a person, to discover what makes them tick, so that he can amuse them. She realises that being funny is an art, and that looking deep into the souls of men could be a dangerous business, as some men wouldn't want that kind of scrutiny. Viola's ability to learn, develop and grow, whilst most characters learn nothing, is one of the reasons why she is the heroine of the play. And as she finishes, Sir Toby and Sir Andrew enter.
Save you, gentlemen!
And you, sir.
Dieu vous garde, monsieur.
God be with you.
Et vous aussi, votre serviteur.
I hope, sir, you are, and I am yours.
Will you encounter the house? My niece is desirous you should enter, if your trade be to her.
I am bound to your niece, sir. I mean, she is the list of my voyage.
Taste your legs, sir. Put them to motion.
My legs do better understand me, sir, than I understand what you mean by bidding me taste my legs.
I mean to go, sir, to enter.
Toby is civil to Viola. In fact, he is keen for Viola to see Olivia, as he knows Olivia will never be persuaded to marry Orsino. Toby has no idea that Olivia is in love with Cesario, also known as Viola.
I will answer you with gate and entrance.
Viola is about to enter the house when Olivia and Mariah come out.
But we are prevented. Most excellent, accomplished lady, the heavens rain odours on you.
That youth's a rare courtier. Rain odours. Well...
Sir Andrew is like a sponge, remembering all these great lines and language so he can use them later, either on Olivia or some other poor unsuspecting girl.
My matter hath no voice, lady, but to your own most pregnant and vouchsafed ear.
Odours, pregnant and vouchsafed. I'll get 'em all three all ready.
Let the garden door be shut and leave me to my hearing.
So Toby, Andrew and Mariah leave.
Give me your hand, sir.
My duty, madam, and most humble service.
What is your name?
Cesario is your servant's name, fair princess.
My servant, sir. 'Twas never merry world since lowly feigning was called compliment. Your servant to the Count Orsino, youth.
And he is yours, and his must needs be yours. Your servant's servant is your servant, madam. For him, I think not on him. For his thoughts, would they were blanks rather than filled with me.
Olivia wishes that Orsino was not full of thoughts of love for her. Blanks are coins before the pattern or head is stamped on them.
Madam, I come to whet your gentle thoughts on his behalf.
Oh, by your leave, I pray you.
To whet is to sharpen, so Viola is saying that she's there to sharpen Olivia's interest in Orsino.
I bade you never speak again of him.
But would you undertake another suit? I had rather hear you to solicit that than music from the spheres.
Don't bother trying. I don't want to hear another word about Orsino. What she wants is to hear words of love from Cesario, and when she says she would rather hear that than the music of the spheres, she's referring to the belief that the sky around the earth consisted of a series of transparent spheres ruled by intelligences, which were thought to move and make heavenly music, inaudible to mortals. She's saying that words of love from Cesario would be sweeter than that from heaven.
Dear lady...
Give me leave, beseech you. I did send, after the last enchantment you did hear, a ring in chase of you. So did I abuse myself, my servant, and, I fear me, you. Under your hard construction must I sit, to force that on you in a shameful cunning which you knew none of yours. What might you think? Have you not set mine honour at the stake, and baited it with all the unmuzzled thoughts the tyrannous heart can think? To one of your receiving enough is shown. A cypress, not a bosom, hides my heart. So let me hear you speak.
She admits that sending Malvolio after him with her ring was a ploy to make sure he returned. She risked her honour in doing so, and opened her mind to desires and hopes that if he refuses her now, he may as well kill her. So what's it to be? The bosom of love, or the cypress of death? Cypress being the wood used to make coffins.
I pity you. That's a degree to love.
Brilliant. Viola gives her a kick in the teeth, and she chooses to see it as a positive encouragement.
No, not agrees, for 'tis a vulgar proof that very oft we pity enemies.
No, it isn't a tiny step to love. We cannot be together.
Why then, methinks, 'tis time to smile again. Oh, world... How apt the poor are to be proud. If one should be a prey, how much the better to fall before the lion than the wolf. The clock upbraids me with the waste of time. Be not afraid, good youth, I will not have you. And yet when wit and youth is come to harvest... Your wife is like to reap a proper man. There lies your way. Due west.
Okay, I understand. You don't want me, she says. And to show how mature she is, adds, One day you will make someone a great husband. Go on, go west. By this she means that he is her son, and by leaving all hope dies like the sunset.
Then westward ho! Grace and good disposition attend your ladyship. You'll nothing, madam, to my lord by me?
Viola is happy to leave, wishes her well, and asks if she has any message for Orsino.
Stay. I prithee, tell me what thou think'st of me. That you do think you are not what you are.
If I think so, I think the same of you.
Then think you right. I am not what I am.
I would you were as I would have you be.
Would it be better, madam, than I am? I wish it might, for now I am your fool.
There is a comic irony here, and Viola's question is quite profound. Can we change for someone we love? Does it make us a better person for trying to change, or more of a fool for trying to be something that we're not? And Olivia turns to the audience to vent her frustration at not being able to have her love.
Oh, what a deal of scorn looks beautiful in the contempt and anger of his lip. A murderous guilt shows not itself more soon than love that would seem hid. Love's night is noon.
Love is painful. She tries to hold it in, but can't. It's too strong.
Cesario, by the roses of the spring, by maidhood, honour, truth, and everything, I love thee so that maugre all thy pride, nor wit nor reason can my passion hide. Do not extort thy reasons from this clause, for that I woo, thou therefore hast no cause, but rather reason thus with reason fetter. Love sought is good, but given unsought is better.
And she just comes out with it, tells him how she feels. She knows the ideal scenario is for love to be unsought, for them to fall in love naturally and simultaneously. But sought love, where one pursues the other, is good too, and so she's going to woo him and win him.
By innocence, I swear, and by my youth, I have one heart, one bosom, and one truth, and that no woman has, nor never none shall mistress be of it, save I alone.
I can never love a woman. Of course not. She is one.
And so adieu, good madam. Nevermore will I my master's tears to you deplore.
Yet come again, for thou perhaps mayst move that heart which now abhors to like his love.
Although Viola was clear and definite, there will be no love between them. Olivia still hopes to win over Cesario. That's love, forever hopeful. And with that, they leave the stage in opposite directions. Act 3, Scene 2. We stay in Olivia's house as Sir Toby, Fabian, and Sir Andrew enter. Sir Andrew is in a right state.
No, faith, I'll stay not a jot longer.
Thy reason, dear Venom. Give thy reason.
You must needs yield your reason, Sir Andrew.
Mary, I saw your niece do more favours to the Count's serving man than ever she bestowed upon me. I saw it at the orchard.
He's been watching Olivia and Cesario together, and is humiliated to see that she has stronger feelings for a messenger than she does for him. Now, Sir Toby has already convinced him to stay once, but Sir Andrew says he will never win Olivia. And so he's leaving.
Did she see thee the while, old boy? Tell me that.
As plain as I see you now.
This was a great argument of love in her towards you.
Brilliant. Sir Andrew sees them together and quite rightly thinks Olivia wants Cesario, but Fabian and Sir Toby need his money and so make out that it was all a plan of Olivia's to make Sir Andrew jealous.
Slight. Will you make an ass of me?
I will prove it legitimate, sir, upon the oaths of judgment and reason.
And they have been grand jurymen since before Noah was a sailor.
She did show favour to the youth in your sight, only to exasperate you, to awake your dormouse valour, to put fire in your heart and brimstone in your liver. You should then have accosted her, and with some excellent jests, fired new from the mint, you should have banged the youth into dumbness. This was looked for at your hand, and this was balked. The double guilt of this opportunity you let time wash off, and you are now sailed into the north of my lady's opinion, where you will hang like an icicle on a Dutchman's beard, unless you do redeem it by some laudable attempt, either of valour or policy.
According to Fabian, Olivia obviously feels neglected by Sir Andrew, and so pretends to like Cesario to make him jealous. She wanted him to jump in and show the young man who's boss. Of course now, because he didn't respond to her and step in, she will give him such a cold shoulder that it would freeze a beard. To win her, he must act quickly, must do something brave of valour, or smart of policy.
An it be any way, it must be with valour, for policy I hate. I had as lief be a brownist as a politician.
Andrew knows he doesn't have the brain, so it'll have to be brawn. A Brownist, by the way, was a follower of Robert Brown, a contemporary dissenter against the English Church. So Sir Andrew doesn't want to be any kind of thinker, not a slimy politician or a Brownist.
Why then, build me thy fortunes upon the basis of valour. Challenge me the Count's youth to fight with him. Hurt him in 11 places. My niece shall take note of it. And assure thyself, there is no love broker in the world can more prevail in man's commendations with woman than report of valour.
Toby encourages Sir Andrew. This is the way to win Olivia. In fact, nothing wins a woman over more than stories of bravery.
There is no way but this, Sir Andrew.
Will either of you bear me a challenge to him?
Can you help me with this challenge?
Go, write it in a martial hand. Be cursed and brief. It is no matter how witty, so it be eloquent and full of invention. Taunt him with the license of ink. If thou thou'st him some thrice, it shall not be amiss.
Toby helps Andrew compose the formal challenge. Short and sharp. Remember, thou is a formal, polite term used by those who are close. This really will upset Cesario, they think, especially as Sir Andrew uses it 3 times. A triple insult.
And as many lies as will lie in thy sheet of paper, although the sheet were big enough for the bed of where in England, set 'em down. Go, about it.
This bed was an early tourist attraction for the Hertfordshire town of Ware, famed for its size, some 11 foot by 10 foot, and 15 people could sleep in it. Today it's in the Victoria and Albert Museum in London.
Let there be gall enough in thy ink, though thou write with a goose pen. No matter, about it.
A goose quill pen was soft and luxurious, so there had to be bile, rage and anger in the ink.
Where shall I find you?
We'll call thee at the cubiculo. Go.
They will meet at a writing room, so Andrew storms off to write his fierce challenge to Cesario.
This is a dear mannequin to you, Sir Toby.
A mannequin is a puppet. Sir Toby pulls the strings and Andrew dances.
I have been dear to him, lad. Some 2,000 strong or so.
Wow! Toby has had £2,000 from him. Countless hundreds of thousands in today's money. He is a parasite.
We shall have a rare letter from him, but you'll not deliver it.
Never trust me, then. And by all means stir on the youth to an answer. I think oxen and wain ropes cannot hail them together. For Andrew, if he were opened and you find so much blood in his liver as will clog the foot of a flea, I'll eat the rest of the anatomy.
Fabian doesn't expect Sir Toby to deliver the letter, but on the contrary, he will. He believes both men are cowards and wouldn't come together to fight even if dragged by oxen. Cut open Sir Andrew's liver and there wouldn't be enough blood to fill a flea's foot. And no blood means no courage.
And his opposite, the youth, bears in his visage no great presage of cruelty.
Cesario looks soft too. At this point, Maria enters. She has news about Malvolio.
Look where the youngest wren of 9 comes.
If you desire the spleen and will laugh yourselves into stitches, follow me. Yond gull Malvolio is turned heathen, a very renegado, for there is no Christian that means to be saved by believing rightly can ever believe such impossible passages of grossness. He's in yellow stockings.
And cross-gartered.
Most villainously. Like a pedant that keeps a school in the church.
Maria says they should see Malvolio for themselves, in yellow cross-gartered stockings like an unfashionable schoolmaster.
I have dogged him like his murderer. He does obey every point of the letter that I dropped to betray him. He does smile his face into more lines than is in the new map with the augmentation of the Indies. You have not seen such a thing as 'tis. I can hardly forbear hurling things at him. I know my lady will strike him. If she do, he'll smile and take it for a great favour.
Come, bring us. Bring us where he is.
Off they rush to gape at Malvolio and to see Olivia's reaction too. Act 3, Scene 3. We are back with Sebastian and Antonio, who have reached Illyria and are walking its streets.
I would not by my will have troubled you, but since you make your pleasure of your pains, I will no further chide you.
I could not stay behind you. My desire, more sharp than filed steel, did spur me forth. And not all love to see you, though so much as might have drawn one to a longer voyage, but jealousy what might befall your travel, being skillless in these parts, which to a stranger, unguided and unfriended, often prove rough and inhospitable. My willing love, the rather by these arguments of fear, set forth in your pursuit.
Sebastian tells Antonio that he shouldn't have followed him, but won't complain any further because he does enjoy his company. Antonio couldn't keep away. His love for Sebastian cuts like a knife, and he worries as to how Sebastian, an innocent abroad, would cope without his protection.
My kind Antonio, I can no other answer make but thanks. And thanks, and ever thanks. And oft good turns are shuffled off with such uncurrent pay. But were my worth, as is my conscience, firm, you should find better dealing. What's to do? Shall we go see the relics of this town?
Tomorrow, sir. Best first go see your lodging.
I am not weary, and 'tis long tonight. I pray you, let us satisfy our eyes with the memorials and the things of fame that do renown this city.
Would you pardon me? I do not without danger walk these streets. Once in a sea fight against the Count, his galleys, I did some service, of such note indeed that were I ta'en here it would scarce be answered.
Despite the long journey, Sebastian wants to see the sights.
Antonio needs to be a bit careful. He's in danger in Illyria because he was once involved in a fight against Orsino. He's taking a real personal risk, as he could be arrested.
Belike you slew a great number of his people.
The offence is not of such a bloody nature, albeit the quality of the time and quarrel might well have given us bloody argument. It might have since been answered in repaying what we took from them, which for traffic's sake most of our city did. Only myself stood out, for which, if I be lapsed in this place, I shall pay dear.
Sebastian imagines Antonio hacking through bodies. But it wasn't like that. He attacked trade routes. It was more of a business thing. For some reason, he was singled out, and if caught, they will make him pay the price.
Do not then walk too open.
Doth not fit me. Hold, sir. Here's my purse.
Antonio gives him his purse. All of his money.
In the south suburbs at the Elephant is best to lodge. I will bespeak our diet, whiles you beguile the time and feed your knowledge with viewing of the town. There shall you have me.
Why I your purse?
Haply your eye shall light upon some toy you have desire to purchase. And your store, I think, is not for idle market, sir.
I'll be your purse-bearer and leave you for an hour.
To the Elephant?
I do remember.
Act 3, Scene 4, Olivia's Garden. Olivia enters, followed by Mariah.
I have sent after him. He says he'll come.
Olivia's talking about Cesario. She just can't get that boy out of her head.
Oh, how shall I feast him? What bestow of him? For youth is bought, more often begged or borrowed.
How can she win him? With food, with gifts? This is similar to Antonio giving his purse to Sebastian, as both characters try to buy the affections of those they love. It's very cynical and reveals the dark heart of this play.
I speak too loud. Where's Malvolio? He is sad and civil, and suits well for a servant with my fortunes.
She likes having Malvolio around because he suits her mood. He's sad, respectful, and knows how to keep the place quiet while she's in mourning.
Where is Malvolio?
He's coming, madam, but in very strange manner. He is sure possessed, madam.
And Mariah sows the seeds of Malvolio's downfall, preparing Olivia to see him as a madman.
Why, what's the matter? Does he rave?
No, madam. He does nothing but smile. Your ladyship were best to have some guard about you if he come, for sure the man is tainted in his wits.
Go call him hither.
Mariah leaves to fetch Malvolio.
I am as mad as he, if sad and merry madness equal be.
Sadness can look just like madness, and they can be equally debilitating. Now Mariah returns with Malvolio, who is strutting about like a peacock, showing his yellow stocking legs and smiling like a man possessed.
How now, Malvolio?
Sweet lady.
Smilest thou? I sent for thee upon a sad occasion.
Sad, lady? I could be sad. This does make some obstruction in the blood, this cross-gartering, but what of that? If it please the eye of one, it is with me as the very true sonnet is. Please one, and please all.
Why, how dost thou, man? What is the matter with thee?
Not black in my mind, though yellow in my legs. It did come to his hands, and commands shall be executed. I think we know the sweet Roman hand.
He's talking about the letter, which he is convinced is from Olivia.
and because she loves him, he cannot be sad or black in his mind.
Wilt thou go to bed, Malvolio?
To bed? Aye, sweetheart, and I'll come to thee.
She means to lie down and recuperate from this madness, but he thinks she's inviting him for some afternoon delight. Sex!
God comfort thee! Why dost thou smile so, and kiss thy hand so oft?
How do you, Malvolio?
At your request, yes. Nightingales answer doors.
A jackdaw is a common bird, but its call is sometimes answered by a beautiful nightingale.
Why appear you with this ridiculous boldness before my lady?
Be not afraid of greatness. 'Twas well writ.
What mean'st thou by that, Malvolio?
Some are born great.
Huh?
He quotes from the letter. Sure, it is from her.
Some achieve greatness.
What sayst thou?
And some have greatness thrust upon them.
Heaven restore thee.
Remember who commended thy yellow stockings?
Thy yellow stockings?
And wished to see thee cross-gartered?
Cross-gartered?
Go to, thou art made, if thou desirest to be so.
Am I made?
If not, let me see thee a servant still.
Why, this is very midsummer madness.
Malvolio thinks she's teasing him, but of course Olivia knows nothing of the letter, so everything he says seems completely mad. A servant enters.
Madam, the young gentleman of Count Orsino's is returned. I could hardly entreat him back. He attends your ladyship's pleasure.
Oh, I'll come to him.
The servant leaves.
Good Maria, let this fellow be looked to. Where's my cousin Toby? Let some of my people have a special care of him. I would not have him miscarry for the half of my dowry.
She's compassionate towards Malvolio, and's obviously fond of him. She asks Maria to make sure he isn't harmed, and that she and Toby look after him. Notice she refers to Malvolio as fellow, the normal term for an employee. And with that she rushes off to see Cesario. Maria leaves in the opposite direction to get Sir Toby. Malvolio is left alone, looking a little dazed because he expected Olivia to swoon into his arms. But then he realises this is all a test. In accordance with his instructions, he has to put Sir Toby in his place and so earn Olivia's respect.
Do you come near me now? No worse man than Sir Toby to look to me? This concurs directly with the letter. She sent him on purpose, that I may appear stubborn to him, for she incites me to that in the letter. Cast thy humble slough, says she. Be opposite with a kinsman, surly with servants. Let thy tongue tang with arguments of state. Put thyself into the trick of singularity. And consequently sets down the manner how, as a sad face, a reverent carriage, a slow tongue, in the habit of some sir of note, and so forth. I have limed her!
Limed her means he's entrapped her with his charm. She sent Sir Toby so that Malvolio can exercise authority over him and put him in his place.
But it is Jove's doing, and Jove, make me thankful.
This is all God's work.
And when she went away just now, let this fellow be looked to. Fellow, not Malvolio, nor after my degree, but fellow. Why, everything adheres together, that no dram of a scruple, no scruple of a scruple, no obstacle, no incredulous or unsafe circumstance. What can be said? Nothing that can be can come between me and the full prospect of my hopes. Well, Jove, not I, is the doer of this, and he is to be thanked.
He is so desperate for Olivia to be in love with him that he wrongly interprets the word fellow to mean a close term of endearment, not merely how an employer addresses an employee. Maria returns with Sir Toby and Fabian.
Which way is he in the name of sanctity? If all the devils of hell be drawn in little and Legion himself possessed him, yet I'll speak to him.
Sir Toby suggests that Malvolio is possessed. The Bible tells how Jesus met a man in Gerasene who was possessed by many demons and called himself Legion.
Here he is.
Here he is.
How is with you, sir? How is with you, man?
Go off. I discard you. Let me enjoy my private. Go off.
Lo, how hollow the fiend speaks within him. Did not I tell you? Sir Toby, my lady prays you to have a care of him.
Don't she, sir?
Go to, go to. Peace, peace. We must deal gently with him. Let me alone. How do you, Malvolio? How is't with you? What, man? Defy the devil. Consider he's an enemy to mankind.
Sir Toby really plays this joke to the hilt, taking on the role of Inquisitor. The Spanish Inquisition was a terrible body that sought out